If you work for a living, listen to The Union Edge. We talk about your issues and find solutions to your problems.
Hello, I'm Mark Belanger from Radio Labor, reporting for The Union Edge. April 28th is a day set aside in many countries to remember the workers who have died or been injured on the job. It's also a day used to highlight the problems of employees who are currently suffering problems at work. In some countries, it is known as a day of mourning. In other countries, it is known as Health and Safety Day. What is not well known is that the day was started by a little health and safety committee at the Canadian Union of Public Employees in 1984. It is now recognized in more than 90 countries. One of these scientists studying health and safety, now known as ergonomics, at the time was Karen Messing. Dr. Messing is a professor emeritus at the University of Quebec at Montreal. Her latest book is called Pain and Prejudice: What Science Can Learn About Work from the People Who Do It. One of the first groups of workers she studied were supermarket cashiers. I asked Dr. Messing, what were some of the problems faced by these workers?
I got interested in this problem when a friend of mine, Mika Vizna, went to testify for a cashier who had back problems and needed to sit down. And her employer maintained that it was impossible to do the work of a cashier while sitting down. And the union helped the cashier contest this, and it went before arbitration. And the employer said it was impossible to do the job of cashier sitting down. But of course, if you go to anywhere in Europe or anywhere in Latin America or anywhere in Africa or anywhere in Asia, all the supermarket cashiers are sitting down. So Nicole found it very relatively easy to go and testify that it was possible to do that job sitting down. And the cashier won her case. And you would think that that would be the end of the story and all these cashiers in North America would be sitting down. But of course, that isn't the case, as you can find out by going to your local supermarket. And so I became interested as a scientist as to why they weren't sitting down and what were the problems that you could have if you weren't sitting down.
What are some of those problems?
Well, we showed with the help of some other scientists that people who have to stand up in the same position all day, and that's not just supermarket cashiers, it can be hotel receptionists, it can be salespeople in stores, it can be all kinds of bank tellers, a number of jobs where particularly women are made to stand without moving all day. They have problems in their feet, in their legs. They can have varicose veins, backache. And then there's some possibility that there are also circulatory system problems as well as the aches and pains.
So what's happening? Are these workers complaining about their working conditions?
They certainly are not keeping it a secret. We've done a number of studies with people who are standing, and they don't like prolonged standing. The problem that we've had in terms of getting something done about this, we actually did a little study to see what they were complaining about and what was happening when they complained. And what came out was that these people have other problems as well. People who are forced to stand all day in the same place are people who don't have very much power, because there's no reason to stand in the same place. There's a reason to walk around because you have to go from one place to another, but to stand in the same place just means that nobody's bothered to give you a seat. And the people that have to stand all day in the same place, it's because they don't have very much power in the places where they work. And that lack of power is reflected in a number of things about their jobs. They have horrible schedules. They are forced to work very long hours, sometimes without being paid or without being paid for all their hours. And they have many other issues with their employer.
You can hear an extended version of my interview with Dr. Messing on the Radio Labor website. Her book is called Pain and Prejudice. It stands out amongst the many books about ergonomics because it not only discusses the topic intelligently, with an emphasis on workers and their unions, but also because it is very well written. The stories it tells deserve a wider audience. Pain and Prejudice is published by the Toronto publisher Between the Lines. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm John Kerr. On his radio program, Fox News host Sean Hannity pushed a false claim about the alleged gender pay gap in Hillary Clinton's office during her tenure as senator. Here's Hannity.
There is another story I meant to bring up about Hillary, and her campaign confirmed the accuracy of which to the Washington Free Beacon, an analysis that showed that women working in Clinton's Senate office were paid 72 cents for each dollar paid to men. The campaign told factcheck.org that it does not dispute the accuracy of the report, which analyzed the office's publicly available disbursement forms from fiscal years 2002 to 2008.
But in fact, the opposite is true. The Clinton campaign told factcheck.org that the Washington Free Beacon's analysis had been based on incomplete information and provided data showing that Clinton paid women equally. Factcheck.org states that the campaign supplied Clinton's Senate staff employment records, showing that female staffers' medium salaries were, quote, virtually identical to the male staffer salaries. Those records also indicated that Clinton hired twice as many women as men. For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
If you work for a living, listen to The Union Edge. We talk about your issues and find solutions to your problems.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. In studio today, we've got a number of people. First off, Rosemary Trump, former International Vice President for SEIU. Rosemary?
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you very much, Charles.
Always a pleasure, Rosemary. We appreciate that very much. Also with us, Charlie McCullister, former professor at Indiana University of Pennsylvania and machinist.
Very good to be here.
And, of course, now we have John Hare, former business manager for SAG-AFTRA. John, welcome back.
Thanks, Charles. Happy to be here.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Guys, Charlie, you were hosting the Workers' Memorial here in Pittsburgh?
I think the original Workers' Memorial Day, actually, I think was sponsored by the United Steelworkers, Leo Gerard, in Canada. And I can remember them talking about that it had spread to five or six countries. One of the announcements today, it is now 29 countries are recognized April 28th as a day of mourning for people killed on the job in their country. So that's really important. This is a movement that's of consciousness around the world, and it's very important. Here in Pittsburgh, I can remember when we started, we were doing, it was about 35 to 40 deaths a year. And it's amazing with all the building going on downtown. I mean, it is a construction site. Huge buildings are being built. The past year, we had 9 deaths on the job, which is a real tribute to the training, the safety and health consciousness of Pittsburgh workers. I think of those 9, there were 3 or 4 union folk. SEIU, I think laborers, there were several, but... So at any rate, it was very, very moving, and we had great speeches. Frank Siriani talked about his son nearly dying on the job and what it's like to go to the hospital and be told he was shuffled off to the priest, not to the, 'cause that's how close they thought it was. I mean, he was on the verge of breaking down. How do you deal with that? Your own child building in construction like you, following his father, and there he is near death. That's pretty emotional stuff. Mike Stout did his, you know, he's probably contributed 12 original songs on health and safety over the last 20 years. And he sang to Donna Paleo, who's been the co-host or the co-master of ceremonies with me, about her brother Gary, who was ordered on the first or the third week on the job to do a job without any appropriate instruction, and he fell into a hopper and was smothered to death in a gravel operation. And she's been ferocious ever since about this. And boy, I'll tell you, there was not many dry eyes in the crowd when they got, we just heard Frank Siriani, then Mike get up there and sing to Donna, and he did it really dramatically and beautifully. It was some pretty powerful stuff that we heard there.
Well, and there's this chorus of Mike's song that talks about the fact that every year we commemorate the events of 9/11, 2001, where 3,000 were killed at once, and, you know, the pain, suffering, anger, healing that was necessary to get over that tragedy. But yet, we still in America have two 911 events occurring every year at workplaces, where 6,000 people lose their lives every year. We now have technology that has never been before, that with time and training and investment, and that's why I'm so excited about all the various apprenticeship training programs, including the one that Stuart Acuff talked about for home care workers that's going to be happening here in the state, as well as, you know, the apprenticeship training programs that occur in building and construction, as well as for registered nurses, and that there's an emphasis on that. And if we work toward safe practices and having sufficient personnel to do the job and do it safely, and not just cut corners in order to have that short-run profit motive, we can get down to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And that really should be the goal. And by the way, I do want to also bring up the fact that this is the second anniversary also of that terrible tragedy in Bangladesh, April 24th, 2013. Where, as a result of the faulty construction and the fact that, the owners of the building refused the warnings of the workers that this building is unsafe, they could see the cracks in the walls and that it was near collapse, and they were told, hey, you're to go to work or you don't get paid for a month or possibly fired. They went to work on April the 24th, and 1,200 of them lost their lives, and 2,500 were injured. And
mm-hmm.
and it's still a struggle in Bangladesh. I mean,
it's still a struggle here in the United States to get companies to stop supporting that type of action.
Right. It is American, Canadian, British labels, Walmart, that's buying the clothing from the workers who produce this under objectionable and unconscionable conditions. I mean, and not to mention hazardous and unsafe conditions. So, workers everywhere worldwide have to stand together and demand to work under safe conditions. And the only way that they can adequately do that is by having a union and a voice and representation in order to express that. And, if people say, well, workers don't need unions anymore today, if there's no other reason, and of course there's a million reasons why workers need unions, but one of the primary reasons workers need unions is to have an advocate for safety on the job, not only at the time of doing the job, but under the circumstances in which they do it, so that they don't have to contract cancer or asbestos-related injury in their later years and die from the illnesses under which they worked.
Yeah, because management will always say, oh, safety is 100%, but that's our number one job. But without... It's a three-legged stool, really. It's education and training. You have to have management commitment, but education and training, and then organization of the workforce itself. If you don't have people on the job who have been well-trained but also have some power to speak without being afraid of being fired, of actually imposing the will of the workers, of the majority on the job who buy in because they have power, that's what really changes the workforce. I remember when we went to Sweden in 1989 to look at their safety and health thing. We were 25 times, United States of America, worker in the United States was 25 times more likely to die on the job than a Swedish worker. Of the top 12 industrial countries, we were ranked 11th. At that time, only South Africa had a worse safety record than we did. And the key in Sweden is management commitment. Certainly, you have to have that. But excellent training and education supported by the government, and then unionization at every level that makes sure that it really happens. And that's the three-legged stool that can reduce even an industrial society like Sweden. Its death rate is incredibly low.
Right. And you know, Charlie, one of the things that I often talk about when we talk about these types of things, you know, health and safety on the job, it's very important. But if I'm a consumer, do I really want to buy a product? Do I really want to take a chance on a product that is being made by a company that refuses to safeguard their employees? Because I'm a customer. And if they don't take care of their employees, they're darn sure not going to take care of me. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that we need to be aware of. Listen, guys, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back and we'll talk some more. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
The Dr. Frankensteins on our Supreme Court created a monster by declaring that a lifeless, soulless corporation is a, quote, person. But why stop there? Another coterie of Frankensteins is now trying to transform multinational private corporations into nations. Their secretly engineered Trans-Pacific Partnership magically endows private profiteering corporations with sovereign rights equal to those of real nation-states. Under TPP, a corporate nation, unlike individual citizens of real nations, could directly compel the U.S. or other countries to alter their laws in order to increase corporate profits. Of course, the Frankensteins dismissed such concerns as an irrational fear, claiming that no corporation would actually be able to force a country to change its laws. Oh? Ask Flipper. While not yet able to confront a nation directly, corporations can get their home governments to sue in the World Trade Organization to overrule another nation's laws. That's what happened to our dolphin-safe tuna labeling law. Most Americans oppose tuna fishing with nets that also catch and kill the lovable flipper, so we have a law encouraging dolphin-free fishing methods. Tuna packers that comply can put dolphin-safe on their labels, thus giving consumers a marketplace choice. Free enterprise at work. But some Mexican fishing companies got their government to complain that our label discriminates against their dolphin slaughtering methods. And a WTO compliance panel ruled that our label is a, quote, technical barrier to trade, essentially overruling a law that we the people enacted. This is Jim Hightower saying, and now, if TPP is approved, foreign corporations won't have to get their national governments to intervene, for they will become governments. For the lowdown on this, go to citizen.org/trade.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio, reminds you to register to vote, educate yourself on the issues, be part of the process.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
Hi, I'm Al Roker. Let me tell you what's happening in your neck of the woods. Right now, 1 in 6 Americans don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are our neighbors, friends, our coworkers, but we can do something about it. Visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find the local food bank in your community. I'm Al Roker, and together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council. Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. In studio today, Rosemary Trump.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Charlie McCullister. Hey,
wonderful to be here.
And John Hare.
Thanks, Charles.
Always a pleasure, guys. We appreciate it. You know, we talk about health and safety on the job, and we have to fight for it. And if we don't fight for it, how can we expect to get it? And if we don't fight for it, what is it going to be like for subsequent generations? Because, Charlie, people before you and me worked, fought, earned, and got these health and safety protections.
Well, and that's what we, one of the things when in my introduction to Jack Shea, I just try to put it in the context that we look at now, labor management relations in the build, in the construction trades here, is an extraordinarily very participative and a high level of cooperation. It wasn't always that way. There was a lot of work stoppages and strikes, et cetera, that happened, but it was the collapse of the mills and the tens of thousands of skilled workers that came out of the mills that could do carpentry and plumbing and all kinds of mechanical and electrical trades that hit the market in the 80s that just plunged the wage levels down for anybody in construction and undercut the union contractors terribly. They were down to 50% of the local market. And so that really led them to sit down. And over a period of years, a very difficult dialogue, discussion among the rank and file and union meetings and with their contractors, they developed a lot of programs to overcome any kind of conflict on the job. And the great symbol of that became the Pittsburgh International Airport, the Midfield Terminal, where 26 unions and 27 contractors worked together without a work stoppage, got the job done on time and under budget, and then a whole series of other of those types of agreement, project labor agreements, were done that have done work all over the city and done it the same way, brought in the jobs on time and under budget. So that was a watershed. Mm-hmm. And but also remembering that it took struggle. And the biggest and most impressive, probably next to maybe the railroad strike, but the biggest demonstration in Pittsburgh was in 1986, when 45,000 Pittsburgh building trades unions folk came downtown and protested the non-union renovation of the Pennsylvania Railroad Station into apartment buildings. And what I had said at that introducing Jack Shea is that the workers chanted, and I thought when I saw that, well, I was down there, but when I heard that thing rolling through the downtown streets, "Who built America? The workers, the workers. Who won the wars? The workers, the workers." I said, wow. This is a class conscious town who understands, how the work gets done.
And they added on, "Who built the middle class? The workers, the workers." I mean, all too frequently, we'd like to believe that management just automatically creates safe working conditions and healthy work environments and good wages and good benefits. But in fact, we know, because they're doing it today, I mean, it's just way management works, is that they get to keep more and distribute more to their friends if they don't have unions to speak up to pay workers decently not invest into health and safety as a part of their business plan. Mm-hmm. And it means more for them and less for us. And, frankly, they think we're disposable and that the only families that are important is theirs, not our families. And
right.
So And unfortunately, most of those horrendous health and safety issues have been offshored along with our jobs. And I talked about the Reina Plaza collapse of the building that killed 1,200 2 years ago earlier. But there is an organization, an international organization, that is continuing the fight to improve those conditions. And if there's any of the listeners who are interested in helping these Bangladeshi workers have improved health and safety standards and to not be under threat of death every day they walk into the workplace, there is a site on the computer, and that's www.ggjalliance.org, and what GGJ stands for is Grassroots Global Justice. So it's the Grassroots Global Justice Organization that is trying to assist in getting all of these companies that offshore their clothing manufacturing into Bangladesh to put pressure on their contractors and to elevate the conditions under which workers have to produce their goods, as well as to improve the wages, hours, and conditions of employment of those workers. So today I'm so pleased that the labor movement has continued the tradition that I believe this is about the 20th year here in Pittsburgh that we've commemorated the passage of the World. I mean, the reason it's April 28th every year is because that's the date in which the OSHA, the Occupational Safety Health Act, was passed by Congress, I believe under LBJ, right? Was it under LBJ
Nixon.
Or Nixon? Okay, yes. Nixon.
As a result of a movement, I mean, of workers and of the people in general, it had a lot of help from Rachel Carson, who pointed out toxic chemicals and health impacts, and that there was a climate which society as a whole, but workers at the front, were fighting for safety and health, and it had even Nixon had to go along with it. I mean, so.
So it again, as a result of a strong labor movement in the 50s and 60s, we were able in the 70s to get a law, and now we have to fight to fund that law for enforcement purposes, as well as to have the law implemented, and of course the fight for health and safety on the job every day, and so today's was both a commemoration and a celebration, but clearly the only celebration is when we're able to get next year at the April 28th service where we ring, where we don't ring the bell
right.
at all.
Zero fatalities.
Right, exactly.
Zero fatalities. John, your thoughts?
Well, Charlie and Rose, I do remember the bell ringing. Perhaps you could talk a little bit about that and its symbolism for the Workers' Memorial Day here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, the iron workers made out of a piece of big chunk of steel, built a beautiful bell that is three-sided to symbolize the three rivers, and the Painters Union painted it beautifully in black and gold. And every year we have a bell ringer, and we have a person who reads the names, and then the bell is rung. And the prayer is always that we never hear the bell again. But it has been a constant improvement, and it's really in this town, in this area, because of the strength of the union movement and organized labor.
And guys, with that, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Labor negotiations will start soon at General Electric. UE-201 business agent Rick Casilli says it looks like GE will press for more concessions, even though the company made $16 billion in profits in 2014. Casilli says there's a big worker mobilization underway at the shop level to get the rank and file engaged in the talks. Casilli says there have to be improvements and no takeaways as workers look for a fair new labor contract at GE.
GE has shut 24 plants since 1994. They've laid off in many plants their U.S. population. A workers' population is down. They've taken away our medical benefits, not taken them away totally. They've reduced the value of the benefit packages, and our pensions are suffering. And we're just looking for a fair and decent contract in those areas, medical, pension, and job security.
Casilli says in addition to the 16,400 GE workers represented by nine different unions, the bargaining team is also negotiating for tens of thousands of other non-union GE workers. That's because, Casilli says, much of what happens at the bargaining table gets transferred to those non-union plants. Casilli says this relentless push by corporations to shift more costs to workers is driving down the American middle class.
It's cost shifting, and you know, corporations in this country are doing it. You know, they're driving the middle class down, and once the middle class keeps dropping down, the ceiling, which GE jobs used to be great jobs, when you drive those type of jobs down, the ceiling starts falling on the floor, and the floor, you know, of people making $15 an hour is going to drop. Their benefits are going to drop.
Casilli says GE workers are ready to fight for a fair contract. He says GE should use some of those billions in profits to stop shifting medical costs to workers. The California Teachers Association is backing legislation that would shore up the union rights of charter school employees. The CTA says employees of Los Angeles' largest charter school management company are being coerced as the company tries to undermine the right of teachers and other workers to form unions. AB 787 from California Assemblymember Roger Hernandez strengthens union rights while barring for-profit companies from running charter schools. ILWU Local 10 plans to shut down Bay Area ports on May 1st in a protest against police brutality and killings. The executive board and the membership of ILWU Local 10 unanimously endorsed the call for union action to stop police killings of black and brown people. ILWU Local 10 is planning its monthly union membership meeting for May 1st. It will be followed by a march and rally at Oakland City Hall.
Workers Independent News is brought to you by the American Federation of Teachers and its 1.6 million members working to reclaim the promise of public education, health care, and public services for our students, their families, and our communities. More information online at aft.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon. Hey, folks, don't forget, go to our website, theunionedge.com, and sign up for our e-activist newsletter. If you're local, your organization needs some help, we'll get the word out for you. If you're willing to help, we'll get the word to you. It's called Solidarity. We're all in this together. And this is how we get it done. In studio today, Rosemary Trump, Charlie McAllister, and John Herrick. Guys, welcome back.
good to be here.
Fabulous to be here.
Always, always a pleasure to have everybody here. So, you know, we're during the break, we were talking about college education.
Yes.
And the trials and tribulations of that. Rosemary.
Well, you know, the report is out that, you know, where are last year's high school graduates now? Many of them went off to college, 70%. And I guess an equal number of high school graduates are expecting to go off to college because they're hoping that they're told that if they go get an education, they have a much better chance of finding that decent paying job out there. And the question is it true or not? Because, of course, at the same time that you read where, you know, everybody's told go to college so you can get a good job, living wage, good benefits, you know, at the same time we're finding that colleges and universities have a business plan to get rid of full-time workers, full-time professors, full-time teachers, to have all these adjuncts out here where they're paid, you know, per course without any health care benefits, without any pension benefits, without any sick leave or vacation leave. And the word is getting out that, you know, if you go to college, you could be saddled with a huge, huge, huge student debt load at the same time, possibly not finding one of those alleged decent paying jobs.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, the way that the banking system has these college loans set up, if you die tomorrow, your parents are on the hook.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay? And there's nothing, you know, it's incredible to me. You cannot declare bankruptcy.
It's terrible.
You cannot die. You cannot go to another country. They will track you down and they will extract blood.
The biggest growth in student debt is among the elderly because they're on the hook for, they've co-signed. And so now when the kids can't pay, then they're coming after the people who are been retired or even long retired to get their pound of flesh.
And how does this happen? How does this happen? Okay, let me jump on my soapbox for a second. Because you know how this happens? Because people don't pay attention to what their elected officials are doing. Okay? Somebody in the banking industry said, oh, we can make a whole bunch of money off of these students and their college loans. You know what? College students are not the most responsible people in the world. So what we need to do is we need to make sure that we are guaranteed. Is this a government-backed guaranteed loan? No. This is a law-backed guaranteed loan. Okay? There's no other loans like this. They can take anything. They can take your pension. They can take your Social Security. They can take your house. They can take your tax return. And they will. Why? Because they're making more money. Now, how do we stop this kind of stuff? You pay attention to your elected officials. You are properly registered to vote. You educate yourself on the issue. Folks, do you remember me talking about any of this? Do you remember me saying any of this? Do I have to say it again? Go vote. Because if you're not voting, they're doing things like this. And you know what? The next one's going to be something else. And they're going to figure out another way to stick it to you just so they can have more profits. And Charlie, I got to ask you this. When did adjunct professors start becoming all the rage?
Well, really, it's probably been the last 25 years, I'd say, was when it really began to grow. We at IUP, or the state system, we had a very strong union. And we had protections against too many temporaries. The union had actually a veto power over. After 3 years, the rule became, I was part of the temporary faculty bargaining that got this, that after 3 years, the state system has to declare the job either a full-time job, in which that person can apply to become the full-time, but they've got to open it up. If you're there in that position 3 years, that is a real job.
Mm-hmm.
You may not get it. They can advertise and have somebody else come in and be interviewed.
It's a real job.
But it's a real job. You can't. We had a situation where we had a fella who was pretty progressive politics who was 23 years an adjunct of IUP, and they would just cut him every fifth year so he would break his employment. They would cut him to half time so he would break his employment, I mean, because it used to be five, then we moved it to 3 years of declaring it a full-time job. So, you know, it has really exploded, particularly in with all these kids coming out, there's a huge glut of PhDs sitting out there hungry for work and will do anything to get it. So I think it's
why am I paying,
20 years.
Yeah, why are we paying full-time tuition to get part-time education?
Right. Well,
and I'm sorry. I mean, this,
and it's going up. The thing has been going up 4 to 5% every year for the last 30 years. At the same time,
and the only
you're getting rid of full professors making, you know, at least by the end of their career, maybe six figures, but certainly 60,000-70,000 normally, and you're replacing with people making 25. But we've seen a huge explosion in administration costs.
Right, and that's the other thing. I mean, and that's the other thing that really troubles me. At what point in time did we decide it was more important to administrate education than actually educate?
Precisely.
And why am I paying why am I paying $30,000 for the dean to get lights in his driveway? Really?
Or to have five assistant deans, which is what they do.
Well, and I'm glad that you spent some time, Charles, in talking about, you know, the political aspect of, you know, the schemes of bankers and even educational institutions. For instance, Corinthian Colleges, a for-profit institution that had over 72,000 students recently.
They just had their ticket yanked.
Right. They just decided to close down their doors. Because the federal government last year provided $1.2 billion in aid to the students who went to that institution, gave it to Corinthian, not to the students, but to Corinthian to support these students. I'm sure that, you know, as we were just talking about, I don't have the actual figures, but I would be very surprised if it wasn't a multi-million dollar executive, the head of that institution. And, of course, part of it was that, you know, come to our school, we guarantee you hiring and we guarantee you, you know, a great job at the end. And we have all this support to make sure you pass your courses so that you get your degree. In the meantime, if you know, the government went in and investigated them and found that they had very low graduation rates, that the students had tremendous debt loads, and that they really didn't provide the assistance that they promised to help them find decent paying jobs once they did get their degrees. And so they fined them. They fined them, you know, $30 million, you know, even though they got a billion, you know, over $1 billion from the federal government. They slapped them on the wrist with a $30 million fine, and they decide, well, it's time to go out of business. I guess the jig's up.
Yeah. And, oh, by the way, they're not an American company, are they?
Probably not.
I don't think they are. I think they're a British organization, and we have no way of getting that billion plus back. You know,
yeah, and the poor students are on the hook,
right? Here's the deal. I mean, who was in charge of Corinthians' political action committee, and who got the money? Who were the elected politicians that got the money? Very interesting thought process.
Yeah.
How do you get $1 billion, $1.5 billion from the federal government? You buy yourself a congressman or senator.
Exactly.
So I got to tell you, folks, again, pay attention to what they're doing. Pay attention to what they're saying. Charlie, we got to take a break. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Listen, we'll be back in a minute. I'm Charles Showalter. Hopefully, by the time we get back, we'll have some answers for this. Why would you say
this is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you. What would you say? Hey, what could you say? What would you
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This is Chris Garlock, the Union Edge's man in D.C. The Metro Washington Council, AFL-CIO, works to promote social justice for all working people in the nation's capital. Each year, the council coordinates strategy and organizes demonstrations to support the local fight for workers' rights. The council also provides emergency services and legal counseling for workers and supports politicians who advocate for workers' issues. For the latest local labor news, follow us at Twitter, at DC Labor, and check out our website at dclabor.org.
Hello?
Hi, I found your name on the internet. I'm going through a foreclosure. Can you help?
Sure, it's simple. We'll just leverage your transitory expenditures into a fiduciary trust, and we massage those assets before your money goes into my private account.
I don't get it.
If you're facing foreclosure, who should you trust? The HOPE Hotline is a free resource connecting you with HUD-approved housing counseling agencies available 24 hours a day who can give you the information and clarity you need. Call the HOPE Hotline at 888-995-HOPE. That's 888-995-4673. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
We first opened about 10 years ago. We were small, just a few of us, but it was exciting. I always dreamt of having my own business. It was kind of slow at first, but things started picking up. We had big plans, but in our wildest dreams, we never, never thought we'd have this much work. Yeah, with so many businesses caught off guard by the storm, Reed Waste Management has never been busier.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency. And 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Foreclosure is hard on every member of the family, but your family is not alone. If you're struggling with your mortgage, there is help. To learn about the government's Making Home Affordable program, visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE to speak to a HUD-approved housing counselor. It's free of charge. Visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE today. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, NeighborWorks America, and the Ad Council.
Back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon, that's for sure. In studio today, Rosemary Trump.
Thank you very much, Charles. Always wonderful to be here.
Always a pleasure. John Hare.
Hi, Charles. Happy to be here.
And that machinist guy. Dr. Charles McCullister.
Great to be here.
Thank you very much, guys.
On this beautiful day.
It's a gorgeous day.
It's a gorgeous day.
Absolutely. You know, we're getting our blood pressure up over college tuition.
Yes, we are.
We're getting our blood pressure up over over how the system is being rigged against our younger folks.
Yeah.
Charles, and the reason our blood pressure is going up, and you know, it wasn't that many years ago where the state provided 60% of all funding for higher education for students. That, mm-hmm. you know, only 40% had to be brought up by, you know, the students paying, you know, tuition and
summer jobs, all this kind of
exactly.
stuff.
And it was affordable, you know, that it really truly was affordable. And you could graduate without debt and you could go out and get a job and make an investment in a home and a car and have children and, you know, live the good life, save for a vacation because you weren't weighted down with all this student debt. And, you know, and then we had this, you know, from the 1980s on, this, you know, mantra of, you know, less taxes, smaller government.
You know, I can still remember, I can still see the press conference with President Bush, too, talking about, we have these huge surpluses. We need to put it back in the hands of the taxpayers. And they were very skilled at this. And it was a two-tiered system, and they knew how they were going to do it. If you were making more than $250 million a year, if you were one of those people, oh, man, you hit the jackpot. My goodness gracious sakes alive, you got all these tax breaks. You got these checks for, I heard some of those checks coming in were like $1 million plus.
Absolutely.
And then you turn around, and those people were working for a living, knocking down $50,000 or so. Oh, here's your $600. Thank you for participating. They suckered the American public with this. They said, oh, everybody's going to get money back. You're all going to get money back. Yeah. Yeah, well, some of us got real money and some of us got chump change.
Well, and by continuing that program of getting the rich richer, it's almost like there's a set point at which they got so wealthy, now they could really spend big money on buying their congressmen and state legislators to continue to lower their tax rate. I mean, so every election has become, elect me. I'm fiscally responsible. I will treat your tax money like it's my own.
We'll take it out of your pocket and put it into my pocket.
And I'm going to be a crusader for finding all that waste and fraud in government. And, so what it ends up being is that the wealthy have continued to have their basic tax burden reduced so that unfairly... middle class and working class individuals continue to have their taxes increase, because when they pass a higher sales tax, that's more out of my pocket in a significant way, and very little for the very wealthy people in society.
Don't have a sales tax in Cancun or the Cayman Islands.
Well, that's true. And what's sad, they also don't have great infrastructure or great education system either. I tell anybody that if they want to see what a society looks like where people pay very little taxes, or they can easily get out of paying their taxes and have a two-tier society, do travel over abroad. Go mm-hmm. to the islands. Go to Mexico. Go to Brazil. Go to South America. Go to Asia, and they'll find out that that's why they all want to come here.
Right.
'Cause at one time we had a fair system, where people proportionally paid on the basis of their income to address the needs of society as a whole, where we had investment in education, where we had education in infrastructure and highways, and where we had investment in healthcare. I mean, so that we could have this growing eds and meds. And, you know, that's another point that I'd want to make, is that, you know, once again, you know, not only has the labor movement marched and fought for a living wage, but because they found a way to force employers through solidarity to pay these living wages, we were able to then pass laws that said we should tax this money to put in the pool to create the eds and meds. And that's been our salvation since private enterprise decided to go out of the steel business in the United States of America and ship most of it overseas. And so when we talk about the transformation of Pittsburgh, everybody says, Pittsburgh is such a beautiful city, and it is, and I'm very proud to live here, and I love living here. But the fact is that they're going to kill that golden goose too, because if it gets so expensive to go to school, our people making minimum wage are not going to be able to send their kids off to college or to become a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer.
And we'll talk about that when we come back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
I feel like I'm choking.
Prevent your child's next asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like fish sticks. Fillets, I get, but sticks? Maybe we can just compromise on mac and cheese.
Can you make that with Brie?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dad, how do you throw a curveball? How do you build a fort? How do refrigerators run? How do fish learn how to swim?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
How high can you jump?
But you don't have to know every answer.
How many phone numbers are there?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
How do cell phones work?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
What's electricity?
They just need you.
What's the moon made of?
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is John Ondrasik of Five for Fighting, here for RAD, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. You know, style is a personal thing, and your lifestyle is your business. But if you take it on the road, it becomes everybody's business. So please, plan ahead, designate before you celebrate. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. Folks, I want to just throw something out for you. I believe that there are people that are working real hard to get rid of the great equalizer in this country. That's the public school system. I believe that they are going to try and do as much as they can to make as much money off of the public school system as they can. And when they can't make any more money off of it, they're going to sabotage it to the point where it's completely ineffective. They're going to go after teachers, and they're going to vilify teachers, and they're going to vilify the unions, and they're going to vilify the parents that care about getting a quality education for their children. And they're going to privatize schools, and then they're going to turn around and say, well, you know what? We don't like you for whatever reason, be it your skin color, be it your political views, or just whatever. And they're going to say, we don't have to educate your child. You're perfectly free to send them to the public school system that doesn't have the money, doesn't have the facilities, but you can't educate little Johnny with us because we don't like you. And your hopes of getting Johnny into college at $50, $60, $75, $100,000 a year, guaranteed lifelong indentured servitude to pay off your college tuition. Unless, of course, you find some benefactor that's going to hire you and pay off your loans. But I don't think that's going to happen either, because you know what? They can find people from other countries to come to the United States and go through our school system and work. Oh, by the way, they only have a green card. They're not a citizen. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. There are people that are trying to sabotage the school systems in this country, both high school, public schools, and the college systems. And if you don't get on board and you don't pay attention to what's going on and you don't register to vote and you don't educate yourself on the issues and you don't go vote, that's what's going to happen. Any chance of somebody in your family going to higher education? Done. It'll never happen. That's what they want. They want people that can go to work to serve them with the minimum amount of education necessary to do the job. And quite frankly, I'm not sure they really want that, because I can find somebody to do it cheaper overseas. So the next time you go out and buy something, think about buying American. Darn sure educate yourself. Register to vote and go do it. Because if you don't, you may not have a chance later. I'm Charles Showalter, and you're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.